Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Did you bring wine?
I got the glasses.
You guys, I made a quiz.
No, I didn't bring anything, but I'm here to have fun.
Hello, and welcome to the official Broadwasted podcast, where we're drunk on theater. I'm your host, Brian Plofsky, and today it's the last day of the Celtic Tiger. The Factory Girls are between Fox Rock and a hard place, but the Seafarer is dancing at Lunasa with the Lieutenant of Inishmore. That little gem is from the Lonesome West, where the Cripple of Inishman is, and he can't stop saying, Philadelphia, here I come. These are just translations, but now we've got our mojo running into the river leading to Jerusalem. Oh, happy days. Joining us today are the usual beauty queens of Linnane, including Kevin, I'll be the devil, Jaeger.
Oh, I'll take that one. That's a good one.
Kimberly, our games I play master and unofficial babysitter for the hour.
Hello.
Yep, with little falsettos in the Irish plays
yeah,
mix.
Out.
I
don't
know. I was like, to the Irish one in the room.
Yeah. And with us today is somebody you've seen in something you've seen. His career is crazy extensive, but some highlights include Alien 3, The Crying Game, Amistad, Pirate Radio, love that movie, AMC's Turn, Wayne's World 2, With Nail and I, and the upcoming Ang Lee film Gemini Man. But mostly we know him as Padme Amidala's personal pilot and commander in the Naboo Royal Space Fighter Corps, Rick Ollie in Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace. While he's been in a million things, this gentleman is currently making his Broadway debut as Muldoon in one of the best things on Broadway, The Ferryman. Like, literally, go
it's
see
so
it.
So incredible.
Like,
no,
pause this, buy
anyway.
A ticket, and then press play
yeah,
again.
Yeah, it's that good.
Let's give a big Broadway-said welcome to friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
Ralph Brown.
Thank you for that marvelous welcome. It's an absolute pleasure to be here, so it is.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Little fun fact, I had your action figure growing up.
That is funny.
He looked for it this morning.
I looked for it,
us.
And I had your Star Wars card as well.
That is funny.
I didn't have any of them, but...
they didn't make your way to your New York City apartment.
Did you get a lot of that? Action figure?
I get a fair bit of that, yeah. I mean, I have a couple of them myself.
Sure, you know, sure.
I would hope.
One of them is in a starfighter suspended from the ceiling.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So cool. Yeah.
Do you know that your character is sometimes called Captain Obvious?
No.
Wait,
that's new.
Yeah,
what?
Because all of the lines from it are just like, there's a starfighter there.
Oh, okay.
Like, our shields are going down. Like, there's a blockade.
Yeah.
So, in the Star Wars world, it's
that little droid did it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But we're happy to have you here to talk about The Ferryman because, as we mentioned, it's a 3-hour play that feels like 20 minutes. It's
oh my God.
So spectacular. Mm-hmm. We've talked about it extensively in terms of why we like it, mm-hmm. but we're really excited to kind of dig into it with you.
Let's do it.
Absolutely. But before we start, do you have a favorite play or a favorite playwright?
My favorite playwright is William Shakespeare.
Uh-huh. I've heard of him.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
absolutely. Yeah. So that actually, we could do, what have you seen
has
this
has he ever
week?
Had a play on Broadway, though?
I don't know.
I don't know if he's ever had one.
Wait, Brian, what did you see yesterday?
I saw the Phantom of the Ferryman. No, I saw King Lear.
Yep.
With Glenda Jackson.
Different place.
Very different.
Yep.
So I have a problem with knowing if Shakespeare productions are good or not.
Sure.
Because I know when they're good because, like, I can follow it along. Like, mm-hmm. even if the performances aren't great, I'm not saying this has nothing to do with King Lear. Glenda Jackson it was amazing to mm-hmm. watch her work. And Ruth Wilson as Cordelia was spectacular. Mm-hmm. But I know when a Shakespeare play is bad because I just can't follow it. I really can't understand what's happening. Even if I know the plot.
And you mean like the production, not like the play.
Right. Yes. I'm not talking about but on the flip side of that, you know when it's great because, like, you can really follow along with it.
I think that's absolutely fair enough.
Okay.
This is 400-year-old writing, mm-hmm. and he had a much larger vocabulary than we have right now.
Yeah.
He actually was responsible for inventing a number of words, mm-hmm. which we all use. I have no examples. But,
Jessica.
But, if you can't do it in a way that's understandable to a modern mm-hmm. audience, what are you doing?
So,
you know.
I have a problem figuring out if... At what, if it's between great and not great, where it falls on the spectrum of production, because I can empathize with a lot of the characters, meaning that even if I don't understand everything that Lear is saying or everything that Cordelia is saying, the performances are so empathetic, I can latch on to these emotions.
Totally.
But I don't know if, like, it was a good production, if that makes sense. Not the Lear. I'm just talking in general.
So, like, what do you look for when you go to see a Shakespeare production?
Yeah.
I want to be able to understand the words. That's A.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and if the actors are saying the words in a way that I understand, I think that's an absolute triumph in itself. My wife was in an all-female version of Julius Caesar that played in New York 5 years ago, directed by Phyllida Lloyd.
Sure.
And my wife played Cassius in that, and Harriet Walter was Brutus. It played at St. Anne's Warehouse. And that's the best Julius Caesar I've ever seen. It was all women on stage. It was very, very emotional. Julius Caesar is usually presented as a sort of a very political play, you know, about war and about succession and about revolution. And it is about all of those things, but actually seeing it performed by women showed you usually the subtext of that play, as in what are people actually feeling. And it's made me realize I'd never seen a production where that was even attempted.
Yeah, that's so cool.
It was magnificent production.
There's also something to be said for, like, the audience imprinting something different when they see a woman playing a part of that string.
Yeah. And it's time for all of that, you know.
Yeah.
Let's have it all. Let's have the whole canon. Done like that. I thought it was a revelation, and it was set in a women's prison for those who didn't see it. So the prisoners were putting the play on, and all of the props that they used and everything was stuff that you would be allowed to have in prison, and there was nothing else on it. So it was very, very punk, you know.
And it turned out
that the woman guy playing Caesar, Francis Barber, was a prison officer, and you didn't find that out to the end, and that was that was very clever as well. There were lots of lovely twists.
I just got goosebumps. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
So Shakespeare, not a bad writer.
I've heard of him.
So you said, and your wife was in that production.
She was.
Do you find it difficult to, like, separate yourself, like, when you're watching her perform, like, in the show, from being like, oh, that's my wife?
No, it's absolutely impossible. I'm quite happy to not separate it out. I mean, I go to see the production that she's in, plus her, you know, and then I can have both of those thoughts in my brain at the same time.
That's awesome.
I'm quite complicated.
Well, before we move on, what we haven't done yet is, what are you drinking?
What are you drinking?
What are you drinking?
What are you drinking?
Hendrix and tonic.
Oh, beautiful.
Me too.
Oh, the taste of it.
In a Great Comet cup.
Yes. Yes. I've just finished a show. We have a matinee at 3 p.m. on a Sunday, and we come off at 6:30, 6:15, have a little decompress with a whiskey. We have a little impromptu whiskey bar on the floor above me where the empty bottles of whiskey are growing by the day. But it's a kind of a necessary decompress, and I think tonight I had a Jameson, you know, appropriately being the great Southern Irish whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
I'm well on the way to being quite happy.
Perfect.
Kimberly, are you drinking the same thing?
I am drinking the
same
thing. And
what cup are you drinking out of?
I mean, obviously, I feel like people, as much as I say this name a lot, I'll never remember any of the words.
Right.
Reuben and Clay's first annual Christmas Carol Family Fun Pageant Spectacular Reunion Show.
Yeah, of course.
Easy for you to say.
And should we say that? This is our second episode. And so now, that was harder to say than the first.
Yep, fair.
Okay.
And I'm drinking the Milagro tequila with some Schweppes lemon lime seltzer.
Yeah, that's really call out the brand on that seltzer.
Yeah.
You dirty dog.
I'm drinking the Milagro too.
And mine's in a waitress cup.
And mine's in a phantom cup. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining us.
Absolute pleasure.
Cheers.
So let's talk about the fact that this is your Broadway debut.
That's fascinating.
You have done, you've done all mediums before. You've been in the West End, correct?
No, incorrect.
Oh, but
well,
you've
I was done at the
Donmar Warehouse.
Okay, that counts.
Yeah, good. Maybe. Okay, yeah. Worked with the RSC.
That counts here.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
It's like Americans count it.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw some incredible productions there.
Yeah.
I'm going to count it.
No, I was there for 5 months in 1983, which turned out to me almost my kind of professional sort of debut as an actor.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What do you feel, you know, making your Broadway debut after such an illustrious career?
Absolutely thrilling. I stopped doing theatre in 1990 because I had a very bad experience in Liverpool playing a Shakespeare character whose name we don't usually say, but we're not in a theatre, so we can actually say the name Macbeth. Mm-hmm. And it was such a miserable, devastatingly horrible experience for me that I just said, no, I'm not going to do any more theatre now. Yeah. And I stuck with that. Apart from a show that I did in 2009 just to prove that I could still do it. but I didn't enjoy that one so much either. So it was funny. It was like I'd started telling this story and my wife was also telling the same story, which is I don't do theatre. I subsidise the stage because I do TV and film work, and so therefore I'm paying the rent and she's doing the art. And that's the story we told each other and ourselves and all of our friends and all of the profession for 30 years, frankly. And I'm now with a new agent, artists and representatives in New York, and I said that to them in my interview. I said, I don't do theatre, I just do screen work. And they were like, that's going to be a problem, Ralph. And I was like, really? I was like, we build careers on theatre work here. And I was like, okay, I'll do theatre. And I was ready, you know, mentally to go back. I did audition for the Iceman Cometh last year.
Sure.
And I enjoyed that audition, and while I was sort of prepping the audition, I had to kind of put my brain in the space where I would be getting on a subway train every morning and going into work every day and doing this role for 6 months or whatever it was. I live in Brooklyn. And so I'd done that bit of work. And so when the new agent, Scott Manners, said to me, you've got to put yourself available for theatre, I said, okay. And I was available. And this is the first one that came in. Went into the room, met Sam Mendes, had studied the accent over the weekend, had learnt the lines. Scott said, you've got to be first night ready for your audition. You know, you've got to be absolutely on it, you know. Did the scene. Sam said, you've got the accent down. I was like, well, it's an accent I've always wanted to do. I collect accents, you know.
That's awesome.
And it's true, it is an accent I've always wanted to do, and I might slip into it in this show in a minute. And then he said, so what are you doing? You're going back on stage. I said, well, my wife's got an amazing job, which is basically she's going to be doing for the rest of next year, 2019, which I couldn't tell him about at the time because she signed an NDA. But it's now, I can now reveal that she is playing Hermione Granger in Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. So, that meant I had a year off, frankly, from being the breadwinner. You know what I mean? And it was an absolutely new moment for me. And I thought that's a perfect time for me to... And I said this to Sam. I said, this is a perfect time for me to see if I can get scared again on stage. And he said, I think we can do that.
and you picked the right play for that.
Exactly.
And I was offered the part the next morning. And so it's been a thrill. I was very, I wouldn't say scared, but I just felt like I was being very intrepid going back into a rehearsal room at this age. I'm 61. And suddenly putting myself out there in a way that I hadn't done since I was in my 20s. But Tim Hoare, who actually directed the new cast, was so wonderful. He was so compassionate. He was very even-handed with the politics of the play. And he was so emotionally literate that it's been a joy. It's been an absolute joy going into work every day. Strap hanging with all the commuters at 9 a.m. You know, and feeling like a proper New Yorker for the first time for 5 years. And just with this new group of people, most of whom are Americans, tackling this wonderful, wonderful piece of work. It's just been an honor, privilege.
In terms of you being a part of the new cast coming in, how much of your decision-making was up to you and how much of the decision-making was kind of already established because the original cast had done it?
Yeah, it's a really great question. I mean, if you're coming into a play that's already a hit and has already been reviewed and you're inheriting this show, you know, the fact that you're inheriting it proves it's a hit. I mean, it means it's going on and people don't usually do longer than a year, do they? And this is a British cast that I was inheriting it from. There's a track that you're expected to follow. You know, when you say that line, you're standing there, you know, and you come on through that door. And when you have that conversation, you're over there. And so there was a track, but at the same time, when I saw the show, there were things in it that I wanted to have a look at, you know, in terms of what my character was doing. And Tim was generous enough to say, yeah, try it, do it, you know. And so it's not exactly the same as the last production.
Sure.
Not for me and not for the whole cast, frankly. Nevertheless, you know, the production we're doing is the production that everyone has seen or hasn't seen over the last 6-7 months.
Everyone go see it.
So, yeah, it's a bit of both. It's a bit of, like, you know, getting on that track and on that train, and a bit of me going, well, in this bit, I'd rather just move over there.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, let's see if it works. And Sure. Sam came in and watched the dress rehearsal, and he watched the first night, and then we had 4.5 hours of notes. You know, and he was like, you know, you could sit down if you want in that last scene. You could sit down if you want to. And I said, I don't really want to sit down. I don't really want to sit down. Then when I saw it, I didn't want to sit. I didn't like the fact the character sat down at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I bravely offered to multiple Oscar winner Sam Mendes. and he said, why?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, because I just think the tension demands that I stand up, and I just think it's not a done deal, you know, until sitting down suggests that you've kind of accepted, you know, yeah. I don't know, it just felt like I just wanted to keep it tight and keep it tense, and
like, that's just a little exploding on stage. Maybe we should cut the plastic bag.
Right.
Maybe. Yeah. No, it's been amazing. It's been an amazing show to come into, and, you know, it's made me actually feel born again happy is my phrase of the year. I feel like I'm in my 20s again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, remembering why I came into this business, why I wanted to become an actor. I started in the theater. I did 10 years in the theater, and I've just gone back there. At this age, it's been incredible.
That's awesome.
Now, had you ever done a piece where you had to work with babies and like a live goose before?
No, I
don't think anyone has. Yeah.
A rabbit's with you, right?
And a rabbit in my face every night.
Seriously.
I imagine like popping a Claritin before each production. Yeah.
No,
because we've heard fun stories about the goose like doing silly things, like laying on people's shoulders.
Oh, when I saw the goose like laid its head down.
Yeah, and it poops now and again, you know.
Oh, great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it brings the house down every time, obviously.
Of course, any tension release in that show is just going to get a huge laugh, I would imagine.
I mean, the thing is, animals and children, they take the audience's attention because the audience knows, without even thinking about it, that they're not acting.
Yeah.
They're being, you know what I mean? Yep. And so you're kind of compelled to watch what they're going to do.
Yep.
And this afternoon in the matinee, there's a scene where Mary, who's the sort of mum, comes down the stairs with a real baby in her arms. And I say, oh, is that your latest addition there, Mary? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, what's his name? She's like, Bobby. I'm like, Bobby, that's a nice name. And then for some reason, my hand suddenly went up in the air and I waved at the baby. And the baby waved back. The youngest actor I've ever worked with.
And you listened and responded?
So is your memoir going to be called The Baby Waved Back?
The Baby Waved Back. His name is Sean. I mean, and he's an absolute star. And he knows exactly what he's doing.
Uh-huh. Oh,
he
yeah.
knows exactly what he's doing.
Oh, that's incredible.
He How knows old what's is expected. He?
He's 8, 9 months old.
Okay.
Yeah.
Should we play a game?
Sure.
Yeah, let's play a game.
Sure.
You ready?
Ah.
All right.
Oh, it's a funny one.
Excellent. Good.
This first game of the night is actually brought to us by our sponsors at goldstar.com.
Okay, great.
Where you can find tickets to The Ferryman.
Yes, you can.
So if you go to goldstar.com/broadwasted and then use our code broadwasted, all caps, when you check out, you actually get $10 off your tickets.
Yes. Login.
I would say head to The Ferryman first.
Do it.
I don't know. When you log in,
here.
Well, when you log in, you have to like... You, like, take a survey of, like, what kind of things do you want to see? Because they do events and, like, theater and stuff.
Sure.
And all of many different things. And so when I made my... I don't know why, but The Ferryman is literally on the top of my screen when I log
in. As it should be.
It's like, you would like this one. And I'm like, yeah, I saw it.
What so good.
We got to go again.
Yeah, we do have to go again.
You really do.
I know.
You know why?
Yeah.
Because I'm in it.
I know! Okay. Let's find out my screenshots from this morning.
Kimberly and my parents are all freaking out because we're talking to a guy from Turn. So, like that's, like, their show.
Oh, yes. My mother's very excited. She goes, oh, I know him. He's a meanie. Text this morning. So, as we've decided, discussed, told you about, goldstar.com has discount tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you use our code, you also get $10 off.
Great.
So, while I was perusing the site today...
Mm-hmm.
I found a lot of interesting things you can do.
Okay.
For some shocking prices.
Great.
So, I'm going to read... Oh, the title of this game is The Gold Star Price is Right.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm so excited.
To which I'll also tell you, didn't do all that much research about the rules of The Price is Right. Just made up that name.
Right. A lot of disappointed people switching off right now.
I vaguely looked it up, and this is what they call a one-bid round.
Okay, sure.
Okay. So I'm going to
Kevin and I are like, yes, we know.
Yeah, we're in. Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's the beginning when you get called down from the audience. That one.
Yes.
That one. I went no further.
Great.
Okay.
$1.
Yes, exactly. So I'm going to read the description of a show or experience that is available to you at goldstar.com. You need to decide how much you think those ticket prices are. Now, a lot of these things range. So, for instance, the Ferryman ranges from $49 to $110.
Right.
So we're going to go with guess the lowest price.
Okay,
cool.
Got it.
Without going over.
I'm genuinely excited to play this.
Yes. I know.
Yeah.
Oh, should we get bells?
Yeah, they're behind you.
Doo-doo.
Beautiful.
Bell noises.
Perfect.
They're just fun. Okay.
What are the bells for, actually?
I guess when you are done.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Like guessing your bid, you can just ring your bell.
Okay, sure.
Since we since it's not a visual medium and no one will see it like flashing underneath of you what you bid.
Great.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
Just some sounds. So you're going to try and guess the lowest price.
Okay.
We'll do two rounds. So
sure.
You'll all guess. I will let you know what is right, which is closest to the actual price without going over.
Sure.
Hence Kevin's $1 joke.
Got it.
That
was not a joke. That was real life.
I did actually research the rules of the prices, right? There are some very interesting loopholes of, like, if everyone goes over and then you have to go back and, like, it's a whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we used to watch it in study hall. Anyway. Your first guess. So I'm going to read you the description. You can ask some follow-up questions if you'd like.
Okay.
Evening jazz cruise aboard the yacht Manhattan. Cruise New York City's famous harbor aboard the 1920s-style yacht Manhattan while listening to live jazz. Sit back and enjoy a beer, wine, or champagne included as part of your ticket.
Okay.
While you take in the gorgeous view of the New York skyline and our quintessential lower Manhattan harbor sights in this two-hour cruise.
Mm-hmm.
The onboard band sets a festive jazzy mood with selections from the Great American Songbook by New York City jazz legends such as Duke Ellington and Charlie Parker, just to name a few. Two. They named two.
A few is more than two.
Yeah. Whether you need a unique way to unwind or just want to impress a date, this is just the ticket.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to say $35.
All right.
All right. I'm going to go 25.
25, okay.
I'm going to go 30. I'll go right in the middle.
30. So what do we say? 35?
35.
25?
25.
30.
30. And the price is $50.40.
Oh!
Perfect. So then our lowest winner, Brian, lowest winner, lowest guess, Brian will get out, yeah?
Oh, is that how
that
I'm
was the worst
it?
Guess? Yeah.
Okay, sure. Yes. I'm out.
Okay, so you're out.
That's
okay.
What I decided.
Great.
Oh, okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because then we're just going to do two.
But I won, though, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
You definitely won.
But I have to stay and play again because I didn't actually win.
Correct.
Won that
you
round.
Won to stay in.
Exactly.
Got it.
Yes.
And then I didn't lose.
Yes.
Got it.
I'm with it.
Oh, wait.
Okay.
Maybe I'm resolving my rules in my head.
It's okay. This works.
I'm like, why did I think I needed five things when now I'm just reading two things?
This works.
Okay. I'm just going to read another, and you're all free back in.
Okay.
Yes, he's yes. So we're going to give it
a point.
So
he has
one. So you have 1 point.
Thank you.
Great. Naked Boys Singing, the smash hit musical comedy.
Yeah. Okay.
The title says it all. This unique evening of entertainment, even for New York... This is a unique evening of entertainment, even for New York City. What are they saying about our town?
I don't know.
That
we have a lot of naked boys who sing?
I mean...
No, that we don't have any.
Right.
Eight hunks display all of their charms as they celebrate the splendors of male nudity in comedy, song, and dance. This sensational review features 16 original songs, from the sassy opening number, Gratuitous Nudity, to the hilarious Bliss of a Briss. Naked Boys Singing, which made its triumphant return to Off-Broadway last year, has been hailed by audiences and critics alike as a surefire crowd-pleaser for bachelorette parties, girls, and boys' night outs, or just a roaring good time for anyone who appreciates the male form, a good laugh, and great music.
Yeah, sure.
Kevin, why don't you start?
All right, I'm going to say $25.
All right.
I'm going to go $39.
Interesting.
Ooh. I'm going to go $24.
Oh, okay.
And we get our first...
Exact?
Nope. The lowest price ticket for this show is $20.
Oh, we all went over.
Which means you've all gone over, so you all get to guess again now knowing... Oh, wait, no, I did it wrong. You don't get to guess again because I told you how much it cost. Well, you all lose.
Okay.
Great.
Perfect.
Next. The Broadway Prohibition Pub Crawl. Explore the Broadway Theater District and some of in some of the pubs that were actual speakeasies during Prohibition on your Urban Villages Tours Broadway Prohibition Pub Crawl. Your tour guide will help make the past come alive as you see some of the old Broadway theaters and the speakeasies that served as thirsty theater-going public. Learn about how one of the most famous speakeasies would dispose of their spirits in the case of a police raid. Okay.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
Great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. See a Victorian-era hotel bar and learn how the wealthy skirted and scoffed at the existing laws. Oh.
I like that.
See where one Prohibition's most notorious gangsters was shot. This is a very disturbing a tour.
But it's historical.
Yeah.
It's historical. There's just
give
murder
the public
and
what
laws.
They want.
Exactly.
Relive where the so-called Queen of the Speakeasies had one of her nightly clubs and see where one of the most famous early 20th century Broadway showgirls tended bar at a speakeasy.
All right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'll go first on this one. Okay. Since mm-hmm. I'm done.
Yep. So, no mention of how many fair. Drinks you that's get fair. In this pub crawl. Continue.
No. I'm going to say this is a $20 event.
Okay.
19.
Ooh.
30.
Kevin wins it. It is $31.50.
Boom!
All right. That was exciting.
So I'll all be right. out. It's one versus one. This is a showdown.
Okay.
Here we go.
You ready?
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to choose. Here we go.
Okay.
The fun family musical, Princess Particular. The Secret Theater presents Princess Particular.
Where is it?
A new musical for children. It's in Queens. It's in Long Island City.
But so secret.
It's very secret. This spirit and fight the spirited and feisty young princess is used. I can't read. I'm so sorry. This spirited and feisty young princess is used to getting what she wants when she wants it. And by golly, today she wants to be a ballerina. But King Lotsado and Queen Patience are way too distracted to deal with such trivialities. Sure. Fortunately, her four maids and the Chancellor and Lady-in-Waiting are here to help with lots of fun tunes and hilariously broad physical comedy.
Okay.
Just telling you what
as
it is.
As broad as it is.
This delightful new show by Richard Mazda is a treat the whole family can enjoy, kids and adults alike. You're going to Long Island City to the Secret Theater to see a kids' show.
I say $20.
21.
Lowest price is $6.
Oh.
Kevin wins it.
Yay! Well done.
Thank you. The Gold Star price is right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Go to goldstar.com/broadwasted.
Wait, do it. But if the lowest price is $6, does Gold Star give you $4 if you use our code?
I have no idea
how that works. Are you sure that's not how that works? Whatever fees are involved.
I think we're all winners, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. You all listened to me cold read a bunch of descriptions.
Yeah, beautiful.
And we all blink.
A couple more questions for you, if you don't mind.
For me?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you've seen a lot of theater all over the world. You've been in theater all over the world between certain years. Do you...
And in certain places of the world.
Yeah. All over, two places. Mm-hmm. Do you find it... what's the difference that you've seen between American audiences and European audiences, whether it be while sitting with them or performing for them?
You know, that's an interesting question. I don't actually see a difference, to be honest with you.
Sure.
Generally, I mean, you know, in England, we used to say that the Friday night audience was up for a laugh, and you know, they would be a great audience. They would be very responsive, and the Saturday night audience would sit there and go on then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've paid our money. You've had your review, and we're just going to sit here, and you better be good.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of also true here.
Okay,
that's really interesting.
You know, that there is a difference between a Friday and a Saturday night. Matinee audiences are generally very responsive.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
We really enjoy matinees. I haven't seen a difference.
But recently I saw Mean Girls on a Saturday night, and I was fascinated by the audience because it was the first time at intermission everyone got up to get a new drink or talk to someone. Like, mm-hmm. no one mm-hmm. was, like, sitting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so used to, like, I see a lot of Sunday, Wednesday matinees where, like, intermission, everyone's just like, no, this is what I'm doing for the day. I'm just going to sit right here.
Yeah, that's true.
This is my day.
Not so busy, right?
Exactly.
Saturday night audiences are busy people. They've got busy schedules, and you better be good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But, yeah, I love a Sunday matinee. I saw a Ferryman Sunday matinee.
They're all different challenges. You know, that's the thing is you have to deal with whoever's there, you know, and, mm-hmm. and if they're not responding, you have to just still give them the same show because people might be responding internally.
Yeah, very true.
And you don't get it until the curtain calls.
Yeah.
You know, and then suddenly back. Yeah. You know, you're like, oh, they were with us all the way.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
They were just, like, riveted. They couldn't possibly say anything.
Is there an audience reaction that you'll never forget?
Well, I don't want to do spoilers to the Ferryman, so I'm going to avoid talking about that.
Sure.
But
there was one yesterday.
It's a longer show. And is Harry Potter running about as long as the Ferryman, or is it?
It is, you know.
So do you guys like meet on the subway?
We kind of do.
Yeah, what's your commute like?
I mean, we were rehearsing at the same time in the 42nd Street studio. Mm-hmm. We were on the fourth floor. They were on the third floor. Jenny got cast in September.
Stop.
Right? We weren't allowed to tell anybody until the press release came out. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the press release came out on the day that my deal was done in December. So we both... In theory, we're allowed to tell.
It was announced to the same.
It was like, so we had this, hooray! You're not allowed to say anything. So it was like we were biting our fists for 3 months about this lovely news.
Yeah.
That's
couldn't
crazy.
Enjoy it, couldn't really tell people, couldn't share it, you know?
Let's go to dinner for no reason.
Just because we're hungry. We're fine.
Yeah.
that was new, you know what I mean? Because usually as an actor, the best bit about the whole life of being an actor is being offered a job.
Yeah.
And it's the day when you get to drink champagne and you go, I got that job, I'm going to do that job.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to do it.
Right.
Which is sometimes great and sometimes not so great. But, we couldn't quite have that hooray moment. So we're having it now.
Cool.
That's so fun. Do you guys commute together?
Are you able to? Yeah, we do sometimes, yeah.
Meet each other at the stage door?
Thing is, I take city bike from where we live to the station, and Jenny doesn't. So sometimes we don't commute together because I'm like, well, I'm getting city bike because I can just do it in 2 minutes flat. And you're going to walk through the park and it's going to take you 10 minutes. And so, bye, see you. Have a good show. Have a good show, honey. See you later. See you at midnight.
Yeah. That's marriage.
Does she walk out and she's like, I'm doing part two tonight. I'm doing part two tonight. Don't do part one.
Actually, I wonder if that would be crazy. Like being like, wait, oh, you show up ready to do a part one show. They're like, no, it's a part two show. You're like, no.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. They do 4 shows a week, twice, you know.
We do eight
shows a week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, we both
do the same amount of time on stage, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
Have you both seen Harry Potter?
I have.
Have you not
yet?
We need to go.
Yeah,
it's phenomenal. It is phenomenal.
They've only just started like releasing production photos, even. Like I feel like just recently I've seen
production photos. Their press night was this week, Wednesday, Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Part one Wednesday, part two Thursday. Friday they were dark because otherwise it messes with their schedule. Then yesterday, Saturday, they did 1 and 2. And today, Sunday, they did 1 and they're doing 2 right now.
Oh.
And then they're on, you know. This week... just gone has been our week of hooray. We're both on Broadway at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, so which has fun. Just been, I mean, I just haven't got words really for it. It's just quite extraordinary.
That's amazing.
Incredible. We've lived here for 5 years and...
Is this her debut as well?
No, she was in The Crucible.
Oh, wait, I saw that.
Yeah, she was Tituba in The Crucible. Ivo Van Hovers with Saoirse Ronan and Ben Whishaw and Sophie
Oppenheimer. I saw their second preview.
Yep.
So good.
Yeah.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFF's The Original New Musical from Shayna Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Yeah, cool. Well, when you spent time in the Naboo Royal Space Fighter Corps.
Let's get back to the important stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Also, like, alienate me and Kevin from this conversation. Well,
you would fly Queen Amidala
yes.
from Naboo to Coruscant.
Yes, I would.
Cool.
But we're going to take you somewhere else.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I like this transition. Well done.
You're welcome.
Tuesdays in the corner with Kevin.
It's Kevin's Corner.
Welcome to Kevin's Corner, where I have three highly researched questions to ask you.
Yes, sir.
And today is the name game.
Yes.
So each of these questions is going to begin by talking about how your name is Ralph and that there's other people who are named Ralph.
Oh.
So we're going to dive through that, and then I went through a Wikipedia hole, and we'll find out where these questions end up.
Okay.
So here we go. Question one.
Yes.
Your name is Ralph.
Yes, it is.
Just like Karate Kid and Outsiders star Ralph Macchio, who in 1996 actually performed the lead role of J. Pierpont Finch in the U.S. national tour of the revival of the 1962 Tony Award-winning musical How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, in which he got very positive reviews.
Cool.
Huh.
Reviews on the Run, formerly known as Judgment Day in the United States, and Reviews on the Rock in earlier versions of the Electronic Playground, is a video game review TV show hosted by Victor Lucas and Scott C. Jones, who permanently replaced the position vacated by Tommy Tallarico.
Cool.
Rico Suave was the professional wrestling name of a Puerto Rican professional wrestler Julio Domingo Estrada Caceres, who was born on the 4th of July. So my question for you is this. What is your favorite holiday? And what holiday do you think we should create right now that the whole world should have to adopt?
When you say, what is my favorite holiday, I sort of get the feeling that you're not asking me what my favorite holiday was, that you actually mean, what's your favorite national holiday?
Yes, yes.
If that's
not
what
like
you
your
mean.
Favorite like trip.
Right. Yeah. Okay. My favorite holiday is Martin Luther King Day. But that's my favorite holiday. That's the holiday that I would actually participate in. And then a holiday that I would suggest. Was that the secondary
yes, sir.
Question?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Holiday I would suggest. Well, that's a really tricky one, actually. I would just probably invent a brand new one. Just
sure.
Just a brand new one.
Just something completely new.
Yeah. Which was a sort of a Love Thy Neighbor Day, you know.
Oh,
I love that.
You know, it's a bit like a bit Ringo Starr. I know. You know,
yeah.
It's like a bit peace and love, and just say this is a holiday where nobody has to work, and literally nobody has to work. So all the trains stop, everything stops. There's no operations, no taxis, but you have to love your neighbor.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Like forcing people to get into their communities, and like especially
mm-hmm.
in this kind of city where like a lot of people don't even know who lives
yeah.
next door to them.
Say hello to the people who live next door.
Yeah.
I love that holiday.
I do too.
Well done. All right, here's question two.
Yep.
Okay.
Your name is Ralph.
Yes.
Just like Joseph's incorrectly pronounced brother Ralph Nathan Twistleton Wickham Fiennes.
Yes.
The English actor, film producer, and director who first achieved success on stage at the Royal National Theatre as a celebrated Shakespeare interpreter.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
The Interpreter is a 2005 political thriller film directed by Sidney Pollack, starring Nicole Kidman, Sean Penn,
mm-hmm.
Catherine Keener, and Jesper Christensen.
Mm-hmm.
It is notable for being the first movie ever to have shot inside the United Nations headquarters in New York City. City of Angels is a 1998 American romantic fantasy film directed by Brad Silberling and starring Nicolas Cage and Meg Ryan, where Cage is an angel or something, and Meg Ryan gets hit by a bus.
I can see where you're going. Go
right. Spoiler alert. So my question is, can you please make up three fake spoiler alert statements about the upcoming final season of Game of Thrones?
What?
Not really.
Do you watch the show?
Nope.
Oh, this is even better. So,
so I can do it, obviously.
Yeah,
but,
right.
But yeah.
So what would be three... if you had to predict what's going to happen at the end of Game of Thrones this season...
Okay.
Having never watched.
What are
yep.
your three predictions?
Okay. One, Sean Bean never died.
Okay.
That would be really impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Two, Kit Harington is gay.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I like that twist.
Yeah.
I'm down with that.
Yeah. And three, it was all a figment of somebody else's imagination.
Oh, like, I feel like that could like be Frodo real. From Lord of the Rings fell asleep and dreamt Game of Thrones.
Exactly. So the last scene is somebody waking up and going, oh my God, I just had the weirdest dream.
They end it like
Bride.
Dallas? Was yeah. that the show?
Imagine the letdown.
Yes. I'm just supposed to wait, what's his name from Princess Bride? Like, is being told another story.
Oh,
from
Fred Savage.
Fred Savage is in bed.
No, I mean, they did it a lot. Newhart did it.
Yeah.
Where, the other one where...
The one Newhart, like, he did a second show, but then he woke up and his wife from the first show he did was in bed with
him. Sleeping next to him. He's like, I just had the craziest dream. I was an innkeeper.
I clearly don't know that.
Oh, yeah.
But
so good.
What was the show that, like, you're trying to figure out who killed JR?
So that's separate because they killed the Patrick Duffy character.
Right.
And then they just said it was a dream or
something
like that.
Yeah, he wasn't
like
actually dead.
I remember that.
Yeah. And
what
then,
show?
Dallas.
Everyone kind of took the mickey out of it, but it was actually genius.
Yeah.
You know,
and then what's the Saint Elsewhere?
Bring Dallas back?
It was a kid's like snow globe that he like made up the stories, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, question three. Are you ready?
I'm not. No.
No one ever is.
Question
no
three.
One ever is.
Your name is Ralph.
Yes.
Just like the Simpsons regular character Ralph Wiggum.
I was hoping you'd get around to him.
Son of Police Chief Wiggum and classmate of Lisa Simpson, who is best known as the show's resident oddball and is noted for his non sequiturs and erratic behavior. His lines range from nonsensical or bizarre interpretations of current events to surprisingly profound statements that go over people's heads. And his behavior varies between blissfully unaware to dim-witted to awkwardly spontaneous, even occasionally straightforward. The very nature of the character has undergone seemingly differing interpretations over the years and within various media. The creator of the show, Matt Groening, has cited Ralph as his favorite character of all time.
Me fail English? That's
impossible.
I love
him so much. Yeah. I choose you.
Oh, that episode literally is heartbreaking.
So my question for you is...
So good.
If you had to play one cartoon character in a dramatic, award-winning one-man show on stage, what cartoon character would you play and what would be the basic arc of your story?
Oh, my God. It would have to be Jerry. From Tom and Jerry.
Okay.
Who is the greatest cartoon character who ever appeared. I mean,
yes. Yeah,
he doesn't get to talk, right? I don't believe he's got any lines because it was...
Right, no, there were no...
I don't think
no
there was any lines
no.
in it, which is so pure. I mean, I'm tempted to say Top Cat, you know, and Wile E. Coyote, but no, Jerry is just a genius, and so... I can't improve on the arc of Tom and Jerry. You know, they covered the waterfront. They did the whole damn thing. But give me some big ears. Yeah, and I'll give him some lines.
That would be so amazing.
Oh, yeah, Confessions of Jerry.
What accent would you pick for him?
Oh, he'd have to talk like that, I guess. You know, he'd be a little kind of mousy kind of guy. But he was like, you know, pretty kind of you know, sincere but kind of slightly weird.
I'm so obsessed with this show. And you just survived Kevin's corner.
Thank you. That was very entertaining.
Now I'm desperate. You have to do that after the ferryman.
Yeah.
Like, they'll be like, can you extend? And be like, no, I have to do
no,
a one-man show.
I'm doing Jerry.
Yeah. It's called And Jerry.
And Jerry.
And Jerry.
And Jerry.
Oh, I'm so obsessed with that.
We have something called Patreon, where we have some of our listeners.
Tequila.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Exactly.
No.
Okay. We should call it our patron.
Our patron. One of our tiers should just be called Patron.
Yeah.
Right.
But they have some questions for you, so I'm going to share those.
Right.
What do you do to warm up?
I put my costume on.
Yeah.
Yep. That's what I do. And we have a fight call. You know, so I like to do the fight call in my costume. And we have to wear mics and stuff. But it's like, I used to do a big warm-up, you know, because I thought, you know, coming back to the stage after 30 years away, I was like, oh, I've got to warm up my voice. I've got to go, mama, ba 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 ba. And then I was like, nah.
Yeah.
Do you just say the lines. You know, try acting. It's like, you know, never mind. Yeah, no,
yeah.
I don't. You know, quick, 20 press-ups, like warm up. It's like, nah.
Does the putting on the costume, like the external, the internal, is that you typically what your method is?
I don't have a method. You know, I've done so much screen work over the years that, you know, typically just before a take, I'll be talking absolute nonsense to the person I'm working with, and then they'll go turnover thing, and then we stop, and then we're bang, we're on it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
there isn't a big build-up. The build-up would be turning over, you know, mark it, you know, scene sort of thing, clap, yeah, action. Mm-hmm. That's the build-up, you know, it's 5 seconds.
Sure.
And that's what I'm used to. I'm used to turning on the tap and turning it off again, mm-hmm. and sort of reducing the flame to low, never off, you know, and then mm-hmm. turning it right up to full if it needs mm-hmm. to be full. And that's what I'm used to. And so I don't have this great process, I'm afraid.
Sure,
just to kind of reduce the mythology of it all, I could do it right now for you. You know what I mean? If you said be Muldoon now, I could do it like now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's absolutely. Awesome. So cool. Do you find? I mean, maybe this goes along with that, but you know, doing these one-offs, you know, scenes and kind of like doing the scene, then waiting and doing another scene. Mm. Whereas you're spending 3 hours not on stage the whole time, but at least going through some sort of an arc,
right?
Chronologically.
Yeah.
Is that a different experience for you, or does that kind of fit into the just like turning it on and off?
Yeah, it does. I mean, and because I've, you know, that analogy I used about the gas going up and down,
mm-hmm.
I think what that means is that you're always that character while you're doing that show,
yeah.
whether it's a TV show or a stage show. Mm-hmm. So it's like the character's just inside me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so in some way, I'm him, like now, you know,
yeah.
when I go home. So that's probably the thing that most actors do without necessarily knowing it or acknowledging it.
Sure.
I don't know another way of doing it. I don't think you can completely discard the character when you're not working,
because
mm-hmm. It would just take too long to sort of start it all up again.
Right, right.
Yeah. So yeah, he's always with me at
That's
the moment.
Cool.
You know, and like I have to say, my wife has said to me over the years when I'm playing, because for some reason I always play bad guys.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask about that. Like, is that something you gravitate towards, or it just happens?
No, it just happens. And there is a long psychological answer to that question. I won't go into now, but it's to do with me not being particularly emotionally available for my early years, and so that kind of translates as bad guy, you know.
Yeah.
Mm. And I think I'm now more emotional with myself and in my life than I was then. So now I get a much bigger range than I used to. But I can be bad guy at the drop of a hat. I understand that part,
mm-hmm.
and how to do it and stuff. So. Mm. Yeah, but yeah, in the past, Jenny has said to me, I really hated you when you were doing that show. You used to bring that guy home.
Mm. Oh,
and he was really hard to deal with. And I was like, I'm really sorry, babe. And she's like, it's okay. I get it. Mm. You know, and so that's what the job is, you know.
Hermione and Muldoon, imagine being in heaven.
What an interesting household to come home to, it must be.
Yeah, no, it is interesting. I wouldn't have it any other way, to be honest.
That's
yeah.
beautiful. So is cool. there a role that you typically wouldn't play that you really want to play?
That's a really interesting question. Yeah, I'd love to play a really. I mean, I've never played somebody that's really disintegrating, and I think I could really do that.
Mm-hmm.
I did do that when I was younger, and I just wasn't ready to do it. I mean, I just didn't do it. I look back at that job as one of my failures. As a TV show, and I think now I really could do that.
Is there a specific part that's already out there, or that interests you, or is it you would like to create something?
Yeah, either doesn't matter to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I worked with Paul Schrader years ago, and he was talking about an actor and saying, "Oh, the trouble with him is he can't melt." Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a really interesting, judgment on somebody that when he said, oh, the trouble is, you know, he can't melt. And I kind of remember that rang in my ear because I thought, I can't melt either.
Mm-hmm.
I find that hard to just disintegrate like that and mm-hmm. just let it all go. Brian Darcy James, who I'm working with every night at the moment, he can melt. Mm-hmm. He melts every night.
Oh, he's brilliant.
He's amazing.
He's awesome. So good. And the thing is, our scene, our stuff together is never the same from one night to the next.
Really?
Well, I can't do it the same every night. I just physically can't. I don't know how to do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to do whoever I am that day,
mm-hmm.
within the play, within the lines. But I, you know, if I'm feeling sad, I do a sad show. If I'm feeling sort of psycho, they get the psycho guy, and he rolls with whatever I bring him. You know, he's absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But he melts every night.
Yeah.
That would be a massive challenge for me, but I'm kind of ready for that.
Cool. That's spectacular.
Yeah.
On that note, should we play a game?
Yeah.
Sure.
Let's play another game.
So. Based on a few things. One, my mom's obsession with the TV show Turn.
Oh.
And the reaction that this game got the last time we played it We're going to go back to historical fiction, the musical.
Oh, this was so good.
So this one is slightly different than the last time we played, but I'll explain the rules again.
Okay.
I have pulled up a few different historical events that someone on the internet decided should be movies. So.
Okay.
Those events are in this pile.
Great.
Mm-hmm. We're going to make... You know me, I love piles. Mm-hmm. So basically, this day, we are all each going to create a movie musical that is based on historical fiction mm-hmm. that is being done on a specific network.
Okay.
So you're each going to pick one historical event, one network that this show is going to be on. Mm-hmm. The caveat that makes this one different is it will be a miniseries.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Okay.
And then you can also pick one Lights of Broadway show card that can either be the actor that's going to be in the show, a director, someone that's involved sure. in your show. Cool. I do have very detailed descriptions of each of these historical events on my phone.
Great. Your work.
So once you pick them up, I can tell you what they mean, because great. I don't think you've heard of any of them.
This is very exciting.
They're mostly people.
Great.
Okay.
Ooh. But it's very exciting. Brian, do you want to go first?
Happy
just
to.
Just to sort of,
show
in
us
practicum, show us how this game works.
Totally. I'll just tell you what I have.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I have the 1904 Olympic
what
Marathon.
A good one.
Yes. Okay. Tell me more about this. I have no idea.
So the men's really marathon don't. And the 1904 Olympics games might have been one of the most hilarious events in history.
Tell me more.
Did you know?
No.
So they only had a few runners in the marathon. Oh, only a few runners in the marathon had previous experience. Other participants were oddities. So just a bunch of people showed up to do this marathon. Mm. And basically...
Oh my gosh.
The top three... So the men's marathon first place finisher completed the race in a car... and was disqualified. The second place finisher was carried to the finish line by his trainers, also disqualified. And the fourth place finisher took a detour to go have a snack during the race.
This is amazing.
That is allowed, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Finished fourth.
There you go.
But I hope that snack was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was the 1904 marathon.
Right, exactly.
Those were the highlights.
Okay. So,
yes.
This, the 1904 Olympic Marathon mm-hmm. is starring Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
And it's on Showtime. Okay. So, it is going to take place over 13 episodes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Each episode is 2 miles.
What a mini series yeah. you've created.
Well, it's one season. Of TV. Okay. Each episode is 2 miles.
Okay.
And it's told in miles. And Jesse Tyler Ferguson leads this, like, cast of just total wacky characters that we see what happens to them along the way.
It's like mm-hmm. Bad News Bears, the marathon.
I would even say like almost like Rat Race, you know, like
okay.
where like you're just seeing movie. Them all so around. Good. It's a mad world. Like you're seeing them go through. You have to get to the finish line. You know, some characters are being driven. Other characters are stopping for a snack. Others are being carried. But then you have other ones who are just like getting to fights
hard.
Along the way. Yeah. Someone who's like really working hard. And you have all these songs along the way.
Wacky Races.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think that's the opening number called Wacky Races.
Yeah. Perfect. Love it.
And so, and then, you know, the thematic element of this is just like, you know, anybody can do anything. It doesn't matter if you're a runner or not. You know, you can really achieve what you want to achieve. And I think that Jesse Tyler Ferguson comes in the third place, but like, or comes in a certain place, but he ends up winning because everyone in front of him is disqualified.
Yeah, I think that is the guy who came
this
third.
It's beautiful. I have a tear in either eye.
And it's not, obviously, this is, and it can get gritty because it's on Showtime.
Yeah, just all men running a race gets very dirty.
Yes.
Okay, I have Palisade,
Nevada?
Yep.
Cool. During the 1870s, the town of Palisade, Nevada was home to an elaborate hoax that caused what we now refer to as the Wild Wild West. Mm-hmm. The townspeople used to stage gunfights and bank robberies to entertain people in passing trains. Those people in passing trains did not know that they were pretending And this is where the concept of the Wild West originated.
Wait, really? Oh,
this is dark.
Yeah.
This is serious.
Oh, yeah.
That's really cool.
It's also funny.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They did this for 30 years. Like, trains would pass through their town, and they would stage these elaborate bank robberies, like, as people were in town, like, not telling them that it was entertainment.
This is amazing.
Yeah.
So I have...
Also, there was no sheriff in Palisade, Nevada. They were a crime-free town.
Really?
Yes.
Well, it's like, if there's no Batman, no, there's no Joker.
Right.
Sure.
The Batman, the essence of Batman creates the Joker. But if there's no Batman, then there's no Joker.
Mm-hmm. So this show is called Wild Wild. So it's called Wild Wild, and it's on Amazon Prime.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it is created by Julie Taymor.
Ooh.
Wow.
So the whole thing is about a... The town has hired like a director to make these things crazy and like make it like they want people to think that they actually are joking because they find out that people think that the Wild West is bad. So they want to do what they're doing, but like make it more hokey. So they bring in a director who's like the real Julie Taymor. So she's creating basically what she created with Lion King, but like with the Wild West to make like the show more and more expansive. But it just makes people think it's that much more dangerous in the Wild West. So it's all about how like they thought they were fixing it, but like then they make it even worse. And so it's on Amazon Prime, and it gets like, it starts out happy, but gets like darker as the show goes on.
So are all the songs diegetic or non-diegetic? All the songs are part of the show they're putting on?
No, I think they try... The songs are all part of the show because they're trying to make it a musical so people get that if it's a musical that it's a joke.
Okay.
But they don't realize that people on trains can't hear their music. So they keep doing more elaborate harmonies and bigger musical numbers, but people just think that it's like more of an elaborate like fight sequence.
I love every second of this.
Yeah,
I'm into Wild Wild.
Totally. The show Amazon follows Prime. Like the people in the town and like the conductor of one of the trains.
Sure.
So you keep seeing like both perspectives.
Oh, great. Oh, cool.
Very interesting.
Okay.
Would you like to play?
I'm up. I should do the real historical event first, shouldn't I really?
Let me tell you who it is.
This is called Lewis Williams.
Oh.
Well, here we go with Lewis Williams, who was a slave who escaped captivity.
Mm-hmm.
Then he escaped the world of he escaped the world of slavery in Kentucky as a child, and he built himself a life in Cincinnati. In the prime of his life, he fell in love with a girl, but to make sure that girl loved him back, he consulted a fortune teller. The fortune teller, a woman, asked him all about his past. Then she sent word to his former master, who came and had Williams arrested. Now, while he was in court for all of this, he also escaped.
Oh, that's a cool story.
Yeah, so the next part of the plan involved Williams learning to behave like a woman. So he escaped his courtroom by dressing as a woman and having someone who looked like him, like, pose for him, basically.
Whoa.
Yeah, so he was made to practice walking like a woman, and the Williams successfully pulls off his disguise and escaped to Canada.
Whoa, good old Williams.
That's really cool.
I'm happy about Williams. So this show is on Nickelodeon.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which I think, you know,
You haven't worked on Nickelodeon yet, have you?
I don't know, maybe. It's hard to keep track. It really is. One of the people, I'm not going to say the star, because this person, if this person played Lewis, I think there would be letters to the editor, is Kendra Castlebaum.
Okay.
Yes.
So Kendra Castlebaum either plays the fortune teller,
mm-hmm.
Or she plays, quite hard to get my head around that one.
Probably the fortune teller.
Do you think, should we cast her as the fortune teller? Okay.
Or the woman who teaches him how to be a woman.
Yes.
Yeah, either one. Yes.
Oh.
So, to be honest, you've already said the entire story better than I possibly could. There it was, you laid it all out. I mean, this is an escaped slave who's learning how to behave like a woman.
Yeah, there's probably a big montage as he gets made over.
To be honest, if we pitch that, I reckon that might get made.
Yeah, no.
Especially Nickelodeon.
I was going to say Nickelodeon's in.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of like a Nickelodeon star, but
I don't know who would,
I've turned 30, I don't know.
That's exciting.
Kimberly,
I have to play.
Yes.
Let me tell you all about Hiro Onoda.
Okay.
Has anyone heard of him?
No.
Clearly you have all, so I don't need to read him. So basically, Hiro Onoda was an Imperial Japanese Army intelligence officer who fought in World War II. Mm-hmm. He refused to believe that the world had ended. The war had ended, not the world.
Right.
Wow. So he basically was one of five remaining survivors on this island in the Philippines mm-hmm. after the war had ended, and he thought that all of these pamphlets being dropped down that the war was over was just the
propaganda.
Was just propaganda trying to lure him out of the hills that he was hiding in. Mm-hmm. And so he was there for 29 years after the war ended until his former commander relieved him of his duty in 1974.
That's Gilligan's Island episode.
Wow.
Is that not insane? So clearly, this is going to be on the Hallmark Channel.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
As a Hallmark original movie.
100%.
With a guest starring role by David Hyde Pierce.
Oh. Okay.
Yes. So David Hyde Pierce is what I'm going to say is the... let's see. We're going to create an American general who goes to Japan and is trying to work with them to free this man. Because he's like, it's not right that someone thinks the war is not over.
Sure.
And he is trying to sort of help everyone convince Hiro that it is over, in fact, and that he can come home.
And they try to do that by putting on a musical together.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes.
There we go.
And they, yes, exactly. So they put on a musical, they try and put it
like
on.
Like End of Midsummer or End of Book of Mormon.
Of course. Right. They go to this island and they're just like, we'll lure him out with music and jokes.
Sure, yes. Totally. Yeah.
Obviously, we'll rewrite all of history.
Yes.
And I just do it. This. And of course, since it is on the Hallmark Channel, Hiro will have like a wife back home that is pining for him and sings these beautiful love songs. And they send all of these love letters together and she gets them airdropped into the mountain and that
weeping.
He's hiding
I'm
in.
So beautiful.
And like, they just can't hide them. And they sing these like elaborate love duets together, but like on split screens because she is home and he's reading the letter.
What a beautiful season
you
of television.
You guys have done this before.
Yeah.
Once or twice.
Yeah.
But
that was super fun, and that was historical.
That's Historical Fiction the Musical, the miniseries.
Well, that brings us to the end of our episode.
It does.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely pleasure.
Yes, thank you.
Again, go see The Ferryman.
Obviously.
You can get tickets from our friends at Gold Star, as Kimberly mentioned.
Yes,
and
we probably all will, because we need to see the new cast, and we're obsessed with the show.
Yeah.
So go to goldstar.com/broadwasted.
I need to see some baby waving.
I'm going to do my best.
We'll let you know
that we're there.
I'm hooked now.
Yes.
Also, get your tickets for Ann Jerry coming to a Black Box soon. But again, go to...
The new Roundabout production.
Yeah. goldstar.com/broadwasted.
Oh, well, the Laura Pels.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Or like the classic stage.
Yeah.
That would be really great.
Yeah. Or just in the Vivian Beaumont at Lincoln Center.
Yeah, let's just put in the Vivian Beaumont.
Yeah, yeah.
You can handle that, right? Like a one-man show in the Vivian Beaumont?
Please.
Yeah.
Please. Bring it on.
So much room for chase scenes.
I know.
You can follow us at Broadwasted.
Hey, that's us.
On all social media. Join our Facebook group on Facebook.
Yep, we have fun on there.
And then, of course, you can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Spotify. Rate and review us there.
Five stars, please.
And thank you.
Additional to that, we end every episode with a quote.
We do.
And today's quote is, I don't know the words to tell you how it feels or how to put it in a rhyme, but if you come with me, you'll know how the lamps in the park look like God in the dark as they glow on the streets of Dublin.
Oh, that's sweet.
But thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We
very
really
much
had a good time. Yeah, of course. Always keep an eye out for him because he's in everything.
Yep.
if you want to make sure you do see him, obviously go to The Ferryman. As we end every episode, we raise our glasses and we say,
Zoodoo-wop bomb.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Slancha.
Slancha. See?
Yes,
it's real.
Yes, I know.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suf's has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suf'smusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.